John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, this certainly did not turn out to be the quiet week that everybody expected. I mean, normally in sports, this week with the All-Star game pretty much being the only real action there in WNBA basketball, this is the quiet time. There's, football camps are just on the verge of opening. Two are in and that. But, I mean, it's been busy, whether it's been baseball trades, news of Scott Service, what's going on as far as some NFL things. I mean, it has been much newsier, which, of course, you love that because that's what we like to talk about. And, of course, we'll talk about it by getting into the five biggest stories of the day. The top five is brought to you by Eastside Funding.
Number one.
Well, Jerry DePoto got his extension earlier in the month, and now the Mariners announced this morning that Scott Service has also signed a multi-year extension with the team.
And, of course, that's great news and, of course, not a surprise. Once they got the Jerry DePoto deal done, it was just a matter of time that they would get Scott Service done. And it's a perfect team. I mean, you know, you can say that it's in the same realm as Pete Carroll and John Snyder, how well they work together. And the fact that Scott has had a background in scouting, I think, has really helped. But I think the biggest thing, aside from the fact that he does a very good job of motivating the team, you know, having it bounce back from adversity. We'll see how they bounce back from that horrible week they just had in the All-Star break, and they'll try to at least get that. But what I also like is he's got a great staff, and that also promotes the idea that you try to keep as much of that together. You know, from Mel Stottlemyre to Edgar Martinez. I mean, there's so many good coaches on that staff, and they all seem to work well together. You know, the M's right now 19 games over 500 with this five-game homestand coming up, you know, in winnable type of games against the Chicago White Sox and the San Francisco Giants. White Sox come in here with a 33-62 record, so a chance to maybe get two out of three or three games there to kind of make up for the series that they had against National League teams. But I think always very encouraging. We're going to talk to Shannon Dreyer about the contract extension, what it means, and of course, I think the good feeling. And I think it was funny because I was thinking about this. I know we talked about it a week ago that I thought the idea would be you would want to get a deal done when it's a home game. You know, and that's, I think, the perfect time, right after the All-Star break, right when you can be there, a chance to get things going, have the big press conference and that. So I think it's good news, and I think it's rightly done. He knew this was going to be coming, and, of course, it did come. And so now what you like about this, particularly with the way that Jerry DePoto has set the roster, I mean, with so many players either under contract that are young or they have player control over, I mean, you would have to think that this is more likely a three-year deal. But for 4 years, I think that Jerry has stretch things out, actually by 4 to 5 years, that they can keep a lot of these players together.
Number two.
I'm never 100% sure of anything other than I'm breathing right now as I'm talking to you. But we're certainly looking. And we've made a lot of phone calls. We're on the phone, and we're working them. And whether we try to find somebody to help our starting staff or our bullpen, we will try it. We're also not closing the door on the potential of adding the right position player if the opportunity exists there. I guess in short, we want to get better, and we're trying to find any way we can to help this team out without disrupting the mojo they have in the clubhouse, and also understanding the imminent return of Robinson Cano, which every day is a little bit closer. And really, we're looking forward to that because we know how much better that makes our offensive club for sure.
Well, I think you can tip off into, you know, a lot of good stuff yesterday with Jerry on Danny, Dave, and Moore talking about where this team is and what they're trying to do. And I think that you can kind of get the hint behind the scene that they're probably maybe looking in two areas for position players, center fielder, and also maybe looking a little bit to a beef up catcher, depending on where Mike Zunino is. And we'll ask Shannon Dreyer about that at 10:30 as far as how soon he can come back. But, you know, they need some punch a little bit more in the lineup right now. They'll get that punch. And I think what's interesting is that, more conversations that, you know, Robinson Cano now, despite the 80-game suspension, you know, he won't have second base because that's D. Gordon's spot, and they need D. to be able to play that into the playoffs if they can make the playoffs. But by having, you know, at least, you know, some spells at first base for Robinson Cano and some DH and that, you know, that I think could bode well because his presence in the lineup is at least worth half a run a game. And that, you know, the big number three hitter in that, I think that would be strong. I know that in trying to get some of these trades. And, of course, there's been three trades so far this week. It's going to continue to go. It's going to be kind of fun to see. But you'd have to think they're looking for relief pitching, a starting pitcher, and maybe a position player, more likely center field than catcher. And, of course, we take you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. But I think the one thing that was interesting yesterday in Jerry's talk is that he says he thinks 75% of the trades at the deadline are going to be more for relief pitchers. And, of course, the Mariners already have done that with Alex Colome, getting him, an all-star caliber guy who hasn't pitched like an all-star, but, again, he was at the all-star game a couple years ago. But, you know, he's been still solidified to a degree that eighth spot, that eight-inning spot. And that's Around the Diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number three.
This was a situation that required proactive behavior, and what we have seen is a never-ending series of reactions to things that have happened. Part of that is understandable because many things have happened that no one foresaw. Mm-hmm. But at some point, what you have to do is say, the time for worrying about public relations is behind us now. There's nothing we can do that someone isn't going to be very angry about. So we have to sit down and decide what we think is right, make that decision, own it, live with it, and move on. And just live with whatever the fallout of it is. Because if you are constantly trying to chase your tail into a place that you're going to make everyone happy, which it feels like they're trying to do, and again, I understand why, but if you keep trying to make everyone happy, there is no ending.
And that's Mike Greenberg having some really good thoughts, because the big story yesterday was that the NFL has suspended the national anthem policy and is negotiating with the NFLPA, and for good reason. And again, this confirms why in May this was a horrible decision to give it to each of the teams to make a decision. And what really kind of kicked it over the top was the Miami Dolphins getting a 9-page document to the players and in their office and said basically they have put this under player conduct. And so that gave them the ability, if they wish, to suspend a player for 4 games. 4 games is the max under player conduct by team, 6 games by the league. And can you imagine how bad it would be if you would take the 4-game suspension? I mean, horrible. And that's why the bad thoughts from the league in implementing this and just giving it to the teams to do it now may have come back and helped it out. I've got an interesting thought I'll bring up when we talk to Kevin Seifert at 11 o'clock of one settlement point that they may make that maybe they can get all the players to do it. I don't think I like it, but again, I have an offer that I think can do that. We'll do that at 11 o'clock.
Number four.
The NBA has come back.
What's that?
To Seattle.
The Warriors are playing here this fall.
Warriors are going to take on the Kings October 5th.
Yeah.
Do you remember how mad I was about this before?
What, you're okay with it now?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm not as mad. I don't know. Maybe it's because I knew that it was eventually coming. When I first heard that the NBA was going to play a preseason game here, I was furious. I was like, that's insulting. I wish they wouldn't do it. There was the adult part of me that was like, it's overall a good sign. It means that the league is looking at us as a potential destination. It would be the last event. They're paying attention to us. I knew that as an adult. Like, my immediate initial reaction, though, was they're going to play a preseason game here. And not only that, it's going to be with the team that almost relocated here. Like, that was a final twist of the knife and completely tone deaf to how people would see it.
Yeah, and of course, that's going to be the announcement was made yesterday. The Key Arena will be October the 5th when the Sacramento Kings come in to play the Golden State Warriors. And I guess it'll be a little nostalgic because, I mean, Kevin Durant will be making his last appearance here in Seattle, at least unless he plays about 15 more years. He'll be there. And of course, they are going to start to tear everything down and build it back up because demolition begins and the construction starts right after that game. So everything's now on tap to be able to do that. Durant, of course, was the second pick in the 2007 draft. And you think about, you know, how bad it is for Oklahoma's Thunder, which is, of course, I don't think anybody feels sorry about them. You know, the fact that you know, they could have won championships and they didn't. Had they kept this team in town, I bet you they would have won 2 championships at least with Kevin Durant.
Number five.
The Angels announced yesterday that Shohei Ohtani's 6-week reevaluation of his UCL continues to show improved healing, and he has been cleared to resume pitching.
Big upset in Los Angeles. Ohtani, who's now still a designated hitter, they allowed him to do that. Now they're going to allow him to pitch, even though that ulnar collateral ligament is, you know, he's healing. But boy, you kind of wonder, are they risking it or not? But, you know, they got him DHing, and he was doing okay there. We'll see how soon they can get him in there. And, of course, you wonder, with games coming up against, in Anaheim with the Los Angeles Angels, maybe you get a chance to see him pitch again. I just hope he doesn't get hurt anymore. Hey, you can listen to my show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we're going to go into further review, and we're going to start talking trades in baseball and what the Mariners might do and who you might want to keep and who you might not want to keep. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under Further Review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And, of course, Under Further Review is when we start to break down things that are going on in sports, locally, nationally, you name it. And, of course, you know that Mariners get back and they take on the Chicago White Sox tonight. But it's also trade deadline, and you know trades are hopping. I mean, you know Manny Machado end up going to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Brad Hand ends up going to the Cleveland Indians. And the Mariners, of course, looking for some pitching help and maybe a position player. But with the limitations that they have as far as what they can have as far as offers in the minor leagues, because you know their top two pitching prospects right now aren't pitching, and everybody wants pitching, so they really have to really be creative to try to make some things go. And what they might have to do is, do you sacrifice an everyday player to try to get something added? You know, do you pick up a rental player like a Cole Hamels, or do you try to get somebody that's under control that you can have for a couple years? That's going to be the big debate. But you know that they're going to be looking for relief pitching. You know they're going to be looking for one starter, and again, that position player. But I know yesterday on Danny, Dave, and Moore, they were talking about untouchables, the guys that are untouchable. And so let's see what they said as far as who are the untouchable ones that you can't trade.
I asked the question, would you trade Mitch Haniger for Chris Archer? And the reason that I asked that is because it's not that I did undervalue.
The reaction on the text line was like
that I'm crazy.
Danica Patrick last night.
Which I get. And I think it's because we make a mistake in assuming that the good players you have are untouchable. I think that a team that is able to upgrade aggressively and well is willing to trade good players and bad players. And that you shouldn't have guys that you say, like, that guy's untouchable, and because Mitch Haniger is player control for 4 years, like, all of those things are assets. But if you want to get a really good starting pitcher, and it's going to cost you Mitch Haniger, I don't want to take that off the table just because he's a good player.
Okay, so I know that's not going to get a good reaction, and here's the reason I think you have to have Mitch Haniger as a untouchable, because he's an all-star that's rising, and he's also under player control. And he's, so in other words, you know, when you, because the one thing that this team has to watch out for is if they're going to be making deals like that, it's the luxury tax. I mean, what is it? They're about $165 million payroll. You know, if you go over to like $197, then you have to pay the luxury tax. And hey, listen, if you're taking on salary, fine. But also, if you're going to be, you know, building a roster like they've built, you've got to try to keep inexpensive players that you can control. And being they hit the jackpot with, you know, one of the greatest trades in Mariner history, getting Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura, and doubling down and getting Segura under contract. I mean, those are two all-star caliber players that you have that you don't want to give up. And particularly with Haniger's salary being as low as it is, you want to carry that on, you know, because, you know, arbitration will eventually start to bump things up a little bit, and you may get that payroll out of control. You also have two things kind of working against you and for you. You know, for you, you still have Robinson Cano under contract at $24 million, but that's a big contract. I mean, you almost like to get out of that contract, but now you see he's too important. He's too much of a hitter. I mean, we're a guy that's worth a half run a game. You need Robinson Cano. But you know, in the next year or so, after next year, Felix Hernandez's salary is going to come off, because, you know, he's $27 million going to $28 million. And so with that in mind, you have to have good, inexpensive pieces that can play. And if you hit on an all-star like they did with Haniger, you're golden. I mean, that's why this roster, there's guys like, who would be the guys that would be expendable? I mean, or untouchable. Again, Haniger, Segura, I would say D. Gordon, even though, again, he's not getting on base the way he needs to, but he's such an energizer, and he gives you the flexibility of an all-star that can play second base and somebody that can fill in center field next year like he was doing at the beginning of the season. You would, you know, what I would look at is that, and this may sound strange, so more slap me if I'm wrong on this, but you know, Ryan Healy, I think, is a valuable first baseman, and you need him for this playoff run, but also maybe he could be thrown in if you need to get something. And again, he's a guy that played in the Futures game. I think he's got 18 home runs this year. Very good player. I like him, but maybe that might be something you might have to give up to get something good. You know, he could be possibly out there. Obviously, I think Kyle Seager is really – most of the position players, maybe other than first base, Guillermo Heredia maybe – one that could you can make as touchable. I don't know. Does that sound illogical?
No. Well, I mean, I think this is all pretty hypothetical. I doubt any of this is going to happen. I feel like DePoto's probably going to get more creative and maybe get some guys. He usually gets some kind of under the radar guys, and he won't have to give up a big name player like we're talking. But I think what you proposed is probably more likely than what Danny proposed. Ryan Healy, you know, he's still developing, and there's a lot of upside there. But I think if you get rid of Haniger, they're already – he's pretty much the only set one in the outfield. They're already rotating guys like Guillermo and Span out there. And I just I think, yeah, you would have a starting pitcher, but then your outfield is worse off. What are you going to do out there?
And you remember, I mean, going into the start of the season, the outfield was their thinnest position. You know, they had to get Ichiro back to just have an outfielder because of injury. And, of course, you know, injury still plays in it. I mean, if you're always a one injury away from disaster, and, you know, they, I mean, again, Ben Gamel probably needs to get more playing time. I still like him a lot. Span, I think, has done a very good job since coming here. But if you get rid of, you know, Mitch Haniger, you know, now you've got one of your thinnest positions that you started the season and made it thinner, and you don't have the option of putting D. Gordon back there. And so now all of a sudden, if, you know, with Heredia having some issues right now in center field with his hitting, you know, now you've taken two voids, and, you know, that if you're getting Cano back, that may get you back to 4.6 runs a game, but you take Haniger out, that may take you down to 4.4, 4.3. I mean, you're kind of working against yourself. That's why if they have to make a sacrifice, you know, they're going to have to sacrifice a young player and a young player that, you know, can start for another team. You know, it depends on the type of player they get. So I would have to think it's more the, not Haniger and certainly not Segura, but it would be more the Healy or Heredias that they might have to consider.
I agree, Anna, but I do also agree the one thing that they both could come to a resolution on was that Diaz is untouchable.
Oh, no question. I mean, you can't get rid of a player like this as good as that. I'm an all-star closer who's that good. And, you know, particularly with, I mean, honestly, you look at the Brad Hand deal, and just to get Brad Hand out of San Diego, the Cleveland Indians had to give the fifth best prospect in baseball. I mean, a catcher outfielder in Francisco Mejia, who is, you know, he's one of the best. I mean, that's higher than what it went, you know, a higher cost of a player. I know it was five players for the Dodgers, you know, to get Manny Machado. But I mean, you know, they gave away players in the 60s and 50s as opposed to a player as a top five. I mean, the pitching commodities are harder to acquire because they cost more. That's why you have to, you know, be creative. Take what you can get, but don't give up too much. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we've got a lot of things to update with Shannon Dreyer. We've got the Scott Service contract and more. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is Shannon Dreyer. And boy, it's like wasting no time. You get a few days off, and now it gets real busy. And of course, the busy turns out to be good. Scott Service gets a contract extension, and I think we all knew this should be coming. It has to be good that it finally came. Oh, we're still trying to get Shannon on the line here. But, yeah, Scott Service getting his deal done. And you know, I'm sure he'll have his press conference today. But, again, something that was well-deserved, something that they really needed to get done. Because, again, with the Jerry DePoto extension, that seemed to be a no-brainer. And it was a no-brainer for Scott Service. And, you know, what I kind of wonder, you know, it's like, do you put them in the same category as far as their relationship and their ability to work together that we see with John Snyder and Pete Carroll? I mean, you can see that once the two of them were combined, you know, they worked so well in getting that roster to a point where in 2013 they were one of the best defenses in the history of the league. You know, they win the Super Bowl blowing out Denver Broncos and Peyton Manning, and so good move. But of course, Scott Service, I think what I respect, along with the fact that he's a good baseball man, is he's put a great staff together. And that great staff, I think, really with the youth that's now been brought on this team by Jerry DePoto, is good. And now we got Shannon Dreher. And so, Shannon, I mean, big news today, Scott Service, your reaction?
Well, it wasn't a surprise. I think we all knew it would get done. If it didn't get done, then it would be a huge surprise and an even bigger story, I would imagine. But my first thought about it, and it was the same thought that I had when Jerry DePoto was extended, although it's a little bit more dramatic in this instance, is it really represents continuity for this organization, and it's something that they haven't had in a long time. If you go back and look at it, Scott Service is going to become just the second manager in team history to enter a fourth year, and he'll be the first since Lou Piniella. So it's been a series of try this, try that, and mix and match, and things blowing up and not working every few years. And for the first time since all the way back to Lou Piniella, you're sitting back saying, okay, this is working, this is direction, this is the way that we want to go. And I think for the organization and ultimately for the fans, that's huge.
No, no question about it. I mean, what is it that makes Scott so good that you could, that you've noticed from maybe the very beginning?
I think it's patience. I think that, you know, coming in at the beginning, there were a lot of naysayers about him because you rarely saw, if ever, a manager who came in with no managerial experience. And he'll say, oh, well, as a farm director, I, you know, kind of parachuted into different minor league teams and managed for a game or two here or there when a manager was out. But he'd never even managed at the single A level for any length of time. So that was something that was very different. And it's something that you're seeing more of now. A couple of clubs have that. You know, Boston has got that, although their guy was a bench coach. And you look and you see it here and there. But with how the game has changed and how analytics have come into play, this is no longer a Lou Piniella managed by your gut type game. And Lou, it's funny because anytime you talk about the analytics versus what they were doing before, a lot of the things that they're doing now, they were doing before. They just have names for it now. So, yeah, I think a lot of these, you know, I talk with Lloyd McClendon when we're in Detroit, and he's talking about launch angles and things like that that are just coming to the forefront. And these are things that people have worked on all along. It just hasn't been out there as much. It hasn't been as a collective, and it hasn't had a name for that matter. But when you look at how teams are run now, so much comes from upstairs. And you have to be able to, A, use that information, and B, trust that information, and C, be able to translate that information to everyone around you, from your coaches to your players, and all of your players are at different spots. You know, a veteran might not accept it as the younger player might. So it's a real juggling act and a real communication act, but the patience comes in that when Scott Service first got here, he knew it wasn't all going to happen in one year. There was a huge job to be done, as there was going to be a complete overhaul in systems. And, you know, he went to work at that. He didn't ask for too much or more than what people could give around him. And you know, as the team has grown, his patience has shown in other ways, in that, you know, not everybody's going to take to what you're doing right away. And I think it took the full 2 years and coming into spring training for there to be pretty much full buy-in from everyone. But he's a guy that's been very patient, has not ever panicked, regardless of the situation that the team has been in or what's been placed in front of him. And I think that when this team was going good, and it's been going good for about 95% of the season, I think you've seen that reflected in his players. And, okay, we've just got a one-run lead, no problem, we've got it. Or we lost today, well, we'll go get him tomorrow. I think a lot of that is kind of the patience and the no panic that Scott has brought to this job.
Well, of course, I mean, do you make the comparison with your ability to work so well together, both Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais? How comparable is it? Because I think it is to John Snyder and Pete Carroll.
Well, I'm not over there every day, so I can't really say what's going on. You know, I just know what I've heard and seen and read about the Seahawks and Pete and John, and obviously it's worked. Obviously, it's two different sports, too. But I think in baseball now it's crucial. If you're going to make that investment and that you are going to rely on systems so much, if you're going to rely on analytics, you've got to trust the person that you're giving that to, that he is going to use that. And I think that that has happened too. But I think that also in a game where you are dealing with 25 individuals, all different, when you were playing 162 games a year, when you're together as long as you are and things change so much throughout a season, you've got to have that communication. It's not just a matter of taking reports and executing. It's a matter of a back and forth too. And I talked to Jerry DePoto about this at his press conference, and he said, we don't always agree on everything. And I asked, well, what are some of the things that you don't agree on? And Jerry will take a broader view, he says, where Scott is much more hands-on. So Scott, you know, is on the ground. He is at the absolute level with the players. And sometimes, you know, a general manager is looking at the bigger picture and doesn't want to hear about something that might just affect one game or might be, you know, something that is just more under the microscope, whereas Scott is more about, you know, kind of developing and building and kind of getting into those smaller things. And he said that's where they sometimes do have their disagreements about things, but they work together very well. I think that, you know, Jerry's got to have somebody that he can sound something off of, and they're going to say, I don't know about this. I think there's a little bit of that there, too. So I think in that regard, it's a good relationship. It goes back, you know, all the way back to their playing days. And they've worked together in so many different environments that I think that experience is, you know, crucial. I think Scott was a surprise when he was hired. I think a lot of people thought that they were going to go with Tim Boger because he did have the bench coach experience. He did have that experience in managing the Rangers for half a season. But I think in the end, I think that relationship and that communication was so much more important in that trust level. And that's why Scott got the job. And we've seen it that it has worked day in and day out for the better part of 2.5 seasons now.
Okay, let's get into some of the things that you need to know going into the series against the Chicago White Sox. I mean, first off, kind of go through where it stands. I know they're both going to pitch, but how did they come out of it, both James Paxton and Felix Hernandez, with the sore backs?
Well, we haven't seen them yet, so we don't know. But everything that we've been told is that they're fine. Felix Hernandez did not travel on the last road trip. He stayed back in Seattle. He got treatment. He helped with the Send Segura campaign out on the street in front of Safeco Field. And it was rest that they wanted him to get anyway. So by all indications, he's good to go. I haven't seen him scratch from his start. So I believe everything should be fine there. And I think it's just so much better to give him that rest rather than have him go out there and pitch with something on his mind, not 100%. It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, do we see what we saw for those few starts before he hurt the back? Remember, he pitched with a sore back for two starts. You know, do we see a little bit more of that 5-6 innings, 3-run, more consistency, able to hit the corners and using his breaking stuff and off-speed stuff much, much more? Do we see that? It's going to be interesting to see what happens when he gets back out there. And Paxton, I think, has been pretty much fine all along. I walked into the park with him, I want to say on Sunday, in Denver, and he said, you know, he didn't feel it at all at that point. He was going home for the All-Star break. If there were any concern, they would have kept him in Seattle and he would have received treatment on his back. So as far as we know, I think both were good to go before the end of the first half.
Okay, so now where does it stand as far as Mike Zunino? How's his rehab coming back from his injuries?
Again, we haven't had any opportunity to talk to anybody over the last few days, but we were told that he was hitting off the tee in the cages, and I suppose the one thing I could have looked up and I could look up very quickly is if he's played in any minor league games, because I think he will need possibly one rehab start, maybe not. He hasn't been out that long, but they were expecting him back soon after the break, so we should learn more about that today.
Okay, so now the mindset of these players heading into the All-Star break, you know, clearly it was a very bad week of baseball, something that they have to get through that. Anyway, what are the ways that Scott can kind of bring this team back?
Fresh start, I think, is always the biggest thing. I think that, you know, and I think players kind of automatically look at it in that regard. And it was funny because when we did talk to the players in the clubhouse after the sweep on Sunday, they were pretty much, they didn't want to hear anything about a slump. They almost were defiant in how they were talking about that. So I think while it was not fun to go through it at the time, I don't think it is anything that lingered. I don't think it's anything that erased what they had done for the rest of the first half of the season. And I think that they were kind of looking around going, we need a break right now, and everything's going to be fine after that. Of course, there is a new challenge ahead of them. They're only three games up on the A's right now, and it's the second half is going to be so different in that you are going to be seeing almost all division teams. So it's going to be a stretch of where almost every game is big. It's, you know, you want to win your head-to-heads against Houston and Oakland, and you want to beat Texas as much as possible and get those wins as well. So it's going to be, you know, very intense, very almost, I think it's going to go by very quickly the second half. It's a week shorter than it's been in the past. Trade deadline's coming up in 2 weeks. We could see some changes with that. So it's going to be, I think, very different environment for this team than it was in the first half. And I think that that's something that Scott will kind of stress to them is that, okay, it's go time now. This is it. This is what we've been building up to. You know, we're going to ask for everything for the next 2 months. One thing in particular that he is going to ask for from them is we didn't always see the consistency and clean play from them kind of heading into the break and ask for a little bit more of that. He's also going to ask them to turn it up on the base paths. When you look at the configuration of the team right now, over half of the nine that they run out there on a nightly basis can run a little bit. And if you can steal bases, they want you stealing bases. And if you can't steal bases, they want you running smartly. So they want you to be opportunistic. If there's a ball in the dirt to the catcher, they want you on the next base. And it's going to mean if they fully commit to it, you know, sometimes guys are going to get thrown out, but more often than not, when you're playing the percentages on that, you're going to keep that pressure on and you're going to benefit from it. It's something that we saw early in the season from them, particularly when they were clicking, something we didn't see so much in the last month, and they can go back to. They've got a lot of guys. You know, Mitch Haniger can run more. Gene Segura can run more. I'm not convinced that D. Gordon's toe is completely healed. I think that's why we only saw him swipe six stolen bases in the last month and a half. If the break did him some good, if that healed up more, that's going to be huge for them as well. So he's going to ask for a little bit more in that regard.
Shannon, welcome back. I hope you had a chance to get caught up on sleep and rest and busy weekend this weekend.
Let's hope so. It should be fun this weekend.
Yeah, it should be. Shannon Dreher joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline. You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we go behind the lines and talk NFL. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And, of course, we go behind the lines each day to get into the National Football League. And, Maura, one of the things that was kind of gnawing at me because it was going back and forth. I mean, Nate Davis made the prediction on USA Today that the Seahawks would go 4-12 and, you know, the Indianapolis Colts 2-12. And he's 2-14. And he's got a pretty good track record, I think, you know, through the years with his picks. But, and he went through every game. But I still was shaking my head. And I think what it comes down to is that, you know, and I know, you know, covering 32 teams like I have through, you know, so many years of my career, you don't get that insight locally sometimes that does help. Now, sometimes it throws you off because it may make you biased. But what you look at is that, geez, you know, the Seahawks are down, you know, five players on Pro Bowl defensive players. And so there's going to be this dramatic drop off. But see, here's where the difference is, and this is why I still think they can be 8, 9, 10 win team, is that they experienced the drop-off to a degree last year. I mean, if you look, you know, they went the last seven games without Richard Sherman, Cliff Averill, and they also didn't have Cam Chancellor. Those three guys were out. So the difference is they pretty much had 7 of the 11 starters out there. Now, of course, they lose Sheldon Richardson, Michael Wilhoit, Michael Bennett. You know, those three guys are out. We'll see where it goes with, you know, Earl Thomas. But
lose some touchdowns with Jimmy Graham, even though
But I'm just concentrating much on the defense because I think that's the defense defense is the story right now. Obviously, the story as far as recovering from the defense and making it better is to get a good running game and having more on offense. But here you had a defense that didn't have much help in the first three quarters from the offense, no running game and all that, put them in a real tough spot. Do you know where they finished as far as yards allowed? And again, we're talking about a closing schedule that had at least four playoff teams. You know, Philadelphia, Jacksonville on the road. They took on some, the Rams, which, of course, that really skewed the sacks. But as far as yards allowed, you know where they finished?
Where?
Second.
Well?
3-4. Now, again, you know, that big blowout loss to the Rams really skewed the sacks. But let's go with the numbers. Because, again...
Yeah, they got killed on special teams in that one.
Yeah, exactly. They got killed on a lot of different things. But, you know, they had 58.6 plays per game. You know, they got eight turnovers. That's a number that has to increase. 61.3 completions. You know, they allowed pretty much 82% quarterback rating. You know, did have to try to see, they have to prove some things, I think, on the running game. But I think, you know, they've addressed that. Jaron Reed, Nazir Jones, they added two defensive tackles. So I think that they could be okay there. But when you think about, okay, what is the drop-off? Well, you saw the drop-off. Now, how much more of a drop-off is it going to be without, you'd have to say it's pretty much a wash at the strong side linebacker position. Michael Wilhoit, I liked, but, maybe that could be, we'll see if Markievicz Mingo can add to that, but let's just call that a wash. Clearly, it's Michael Bennett losing him. You know, he had, I think, six sacks in the last 12 games, and where 12 games is important, that's where they lost Cliff Averill. So he had six sacks, and Frank Clark. We always talk about him going from third to number one. Well, he was really number two with Averill out, and during that stretch, the 12 games that he played, I think, he had seven sacks, which really isn't bad. Now, remember, the last seven games, they played better teams than it was really one of the tougher parts of the schedule. And so to be able to hold up like that and then have now a whole off season to, try to add to it. Because remember, they started out and, got six out of seven starts from Byron Maxwell. And Maxwell got in early in that, week 11 game. He got in early. So, I mean, he has seven starts and has been a starter on this team. And now, they got Shaquille Griffin. I went back to 2011. And in 2011, it was kind of ironic because, I think it was like, seven starts or so for Richard Sherman and that. And they were actually going then with three rookies, because you had Brandon Browner in his first year. He was a rookie at the cornerback position. Then, of course, Cam Chancellor was there. And then he was in his second year. And, of course, you have Earl Thomas. But, you look at the bill, their numbers were better because, again, what you're talking about, they assembled what was the beginnings of the best secondary of all time particularly with Browner going to man coverage and all that stuff. But, that they really started, and their numbers were kind of stifling. I mean, I think the quarterback rating was in the 50s. They allowed less than 60%. So you can see that group was better. But this group is at least respectable in the sense that, they have a track record. And now they've had an off season to kind of add to it. It's not like they're thrown into this and you don't know. You have a seven-game window to look back at last year and say, okay, may not have been great, but it's not bad.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I remember last year thinking people were being a little hard on the defense when they were talking about how we were already starting to see a regression when, like you said, you're missing Sherman and Chancellor for a good portion of the year, Averill. And then also Bennett was playing really hobbled. He was playing through that plantar fascia injury. I believe he even had another injury that he was playing through. I think you're right. It's a good point that we've already kind of seen a little bit of what this team will look like without those guys. Now, Earl Thomas is the big one that it's not looking good for and that they could really still use.
But, going through this little exercise I did this morning and trying to look at the numbers, it gave me also a little bit of a different feel on Earl Thomas. And so it's like, okay, sure, it's going to be a distraction with the holdout. Once he gets past five games, he actually really starts giving back some money to the team, which, of course, that's not the team doesn't want the money. They want the player. But it kind of gave me the idea. It's like, let's hold off a little bit on the Earl Thomas trade talk because, you still have his services. And if his services can help more as far as, because you'll have the whole preseason now to look at Delano Hill or Tedrick Thompson or Maurice Alexander to see what you have at the strong safety position or Thompson's case, the free safety position. And, you know, you then can come back and say, you have Earl Thomas and you can still play him. Sure, maybe he doesn't want to be here, but you still have that time once he gets in to judge that. So I think, you know, it's almost better to hold. And then if you get the right trade, you get the right trade. And maybe it's time to move on. But you do have his services for this year, and it gives you, you know, the best, if not, or best, or one of the top two safeties in football and a potential Hall of Fame guy. So I'm thinking now it's almost wiser just to keep him.
Yeah, he's obviously a great competitor. I would hope that once it gets down to football season, he can just get out there and compete. But you just worry that they have definitely tried to make some changes so that there's a different mentality in that locker room, and you don't want someone becoming a locker room cancer. But no, I almost, as much as he's made some decisions this offseason that seem a little selfish, I don't see him as that type of guy once the season's actually in full swing.
No, agreed. And that's the thing. I mean, it's not like, you know, you talk about the closing five games for the 49ers, and they had Chicago in there, and, you know, Arizona was in there that when they weren't playing well. And so they had an easier closing schedule. And again, they won five straight. But I think now there's an overreaction, because if you look at the body of work for the seven games against the teams they played against, it wasn't bad. Hey, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we're going to get into the national anthem controversy, what's going on with officiating, with Kevin Seifert of ESPN.com. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.